Hello, this is Chris Yerkes reading to you from the June 3rd edition of the County Chronicle. We'll begin with the first page stories. Douglas County Board. Continue hearing for solar farm by Jacob Hamm. The Douglas County Board voted to continue the public hearing period for proposed solar farm developments in the northern part of the county until their next meeting, June 17th. The board voted 6-1 to table the final vote on the proposal to the next meeting, with board member Dan Henry being absent. The meeting consisted of a presentation by the developer, Denver, Colorado-based Pivot Energy, followed by a question period from county board members. The company has developed over 1,000 clean energy projects in 28 states and serves over 650 clients, according to the presentation documents. Project manager for Pivot Energy, Merrill Reed, said that there are a number of factors when choosing a site for a solar farm. There's a couple of things we look for when we're looking to sign a lease with a landowner. These include flat, dry, and clear, so we don't have to do grading on the site, avoid wetlands or floodplains, is close to the existing infrastructure for the utility that we can interconnect to, so in this case, a phase three line that's interconnectable and has capacity, Reed said. She explained that the company will mail letters to property owners with land that fits the description in the area and work with them if they're interested in leasing the land to the developers. The proposed site would sit at the Douglas-Champaign County line off Route 45 and County Road 1550 North. The proposal would take up 60 acres of land in total, or 30 acres for each development. The solar farms would generate enough electricity to power approximately 2,400 homes. Construction would begin in May 2027 after a pre-construction meeting with the Ameren and other stakeholders. Fencing would be installed thereafter, followed by grading and tree trimming. Reed said there are no trees on the proposed site and the minimum grading would be needed. Module installation would begin in August of 2027, with electrical equipment installation occurring in September and October of 2027. The developer would lease the land for 20 years with an initial contract that would be allowed to extend two 10-year extensions with the property owner for a total of 40-year lifespan for the development. The company is also building another solar panel farm in Champaign County, north of the proposed development site. If the company wanted to continue the project after the 40-year lifespan, the company would come back to the county board to propose an extension before the board. The solar farms would be equipped with technology to track the direction of the sun to maximize energy generation. I've been to development south of Arcola, and I've seen them pointing away from the sun many times. What makes them so accurate? Board member Ed Carlton asked the developer during the presentation. Reed responded that the panels still generate electricity even if they're not directly facing the sun. She added that the technology can be adjusted to better face the sun by the company to generate more electricity. The company can also track how much electricity is generated on a 24-hour basis. The development would potentially serve other purposes to benefit the local agricultural industry. The developer would allow sheep grazing on the site underneath the panels, which can boost income for the local farmers, according to the developer plans. The site would also host plants that increase biodiversity and would keep the land usable for farming after the solar farm is decommissioned. Pivot Energy pays farmers to let sheep graze during the growing season on the site, according to Reed. She said that farmers can double or triple their sheep flock. Board member Philip Morris expressed concern about the long-term viability of the project. You say the equipment wears down in 40 years. Hopefully the sun will still be shining 50 years, so we need solar energy from now until 40 years. It would stand to reason that we're going to need more after that, Morris said. The development could increase property tax revenues from the site, according to company documents and data from the county. If the land were not used for development, the county would receive $366,000 in total tax revenue over a 20-year span. With the solar development, revenue would increase to $770,000. Reed clarified that Pivot Energy would pay the entirety of the property taxes, including the increase over the lifespan of the project. The next article from the Arcola School Board, Ban Decatur Man for Secret Recordings by David Porter. The Arcola School Board voted May 26 to ban Frank Hermanson of Decatur from school events. The special meeting lasted 2 hours, mostly in closed session. Board President Lucas Schonkweiler said Hermanson had secretly recorded people at school events, including administrators, and had been asked to stop. Illinois is a two-party consent state, meaning that people cannot be secretly recorded without their consent. Exceptions including police officers acting in the line of duty and public meetings. Generally, if there's an expectation of privacy, the conversation cannot be recorded covertly. According to the Reporters Committee for Freedom of the Press, violating the Illinois statute is a felony, punishable by up to 3 years in prison and fines up to $25,000. Schonkweiler indicated that there had been other issues with Hermanson and said that he had been banned from the school previously. The ban is in effect until May 7, 2027. The vote was unanimous. Hermanson said he would follow up with the newspaper to tell his side of the story, but as of press time, he has not. The next article, Tuscola City Council vote to join CILBA full membership by David Porter. The City of Tuscola is taking its relationship with Central Illinois Land Bank Authority, CILBA, a step further by joining the organization at a cost of $10,000 annually. The city previously contracted it with Silba to address dilapidated properties in town. Drew Hull, city administrator, previously said that requiring properties to be raised is the only thing Silba does, and they're good at it. There is no cost to the city for that service, but Silba retains the property that they acquire and then sell them. The city is often upside down on such properties, considering the legal fees and time it takes to acquire derelict properties and the cost to demolish any buildings. Silba makes up its losses through grants. By joining the organization, Hull said the city will be a voting member in the group and will have access to all of Silba's grant process as full members. I was impressed with their progress in other communities, and I recommend that we complete the full membership, Hull told the council. One of the grants Silba applies for each year and usually receives is a $750,000 award from the Illinois Housing Development Authority. Hull said the city could apply for such grants itself but would not be competitive. Silba also has a team of graduate students who research properties for cities. Membership would allow Tuscola to be part of that, Hull said. I think it absolutely would be worthwhile. In other business, the council approved a bid of $14,900 with Alco overhead doors to replace the street shed door and a professional service contract not to exceed $5,500 with Donahue for consumer confidence report preparation. The CCR is for water development. Treasurer Alta Long said that reporting for water quality compliance has become increasingly complicated. The data that we receive is no longer plug and play into the CCR, Hull added in his written report. On the consent agenda, the council approved two community building leases with alcohol, one for Tuscola Music Boosters, Music Bingo, June 12th, and the other for a wedding reception, June 6th, for Eric Coffing. Also approved was a street closure for Library Movie Night, May 29th. Hull also told the council that a bid opening for the Washington Street project will take place June 17th. Work could begin mid-July. The fire department roster was also updated to reflect Brent Wilson's retirement after 11 years of service. Kyle Sweeney is also leaving as a part-time custodian at the end of May. The next article from the Arcola City Council, approved funds for roads in downtown by Jacob Hamm. Road repairs in the first phase of a multi-phase downtown revitalization were approved on Monday night's City Council meeting. The Council voted to allocate nearly $160,000 of the city's motor fuel tax funds for the fiscal year toward various road repair projects throughout the community. The city will repair various residential and commercial streets that total approximately 3 miles in length. Consulting and engineering costs with the Illinois Department of Transportation stayed nearly the same as last year. Some costs for roadwork did increase due to the increase in diesel prices across the country. The agreement was unanimously approved by the council. The council also approved an agreement with Reader Area Development, a consulting firm that helps small municipalities better utilize their downtown spaces. The initial cost for the consult will be approximately $5,500 to analyze properties in downtown Arcola. The city aims to rehabilitate some existing structures in the area before they need to be demolished. The consulting agency has worked with other municipalities in Illinois, such as Monticello and Paxton. After the consultant analyzes the area, they'll present a plan to the city council to revitalize the downtown area. The agreement was also unanimously approved by the council. And the next article, Tuscola School Board, Electric Bill Spikes Board to Audit Costs by Jacob Hamm. Tuscola School Building will undergo an audit of electricity use after the school board discussed an increase in spending on electricity this past school year. The board revealed that at Tuesday's meeting that electricity costs were nearly $106,000 higher for the 2025-2026 school year than budgeted. East Prairie Middle School had the most staggering increase, with the school being budgeted $95,000 for electrical costs, but ended up spending $171,000. The high school's electricity cost totaled $95,000, which is an increase of $30,000 from the previously budgeted expenses. Several school board members expressed concern about the energy costs. The board announced that Ameren will be inspecting the school buildings this week to try and save on energy costs. The board also announced that the district's costs for a property insurance had gone up nearly $12,000 across the board. While the workmen's compensation claims had decreased by nearly $4,600, other categories have seen an increase. The school board voted to table the budget until the next meeting on June 22nd. The next article, Arthur Atwood Lions Club sets July 31st for tractor and truck pull. The Arthur Atwood Lions Club presents the 5th annual Tractor and Bragging Rights Truck Pull set for Friday, July 31st at 6 p.m. during the Moultrie Douglas County Fair in Arthur. The event promises to be a night of smoke, speed, and fierce competition, with some tracks exceeding 5,000 horses. Two new classes highlight this year's pull, a $10,500 open pro stock featuring local puller Travis Kunz and Lance Little, and a $10,500 farm stock. You'll see Fred Helmuth and Floyd Miller in the 6,850 pro farm, and the Castile family and Jerry Bolson pulling the classics. This is the only night where you'll see local pullers on the same night on their home track. Returning this year will be two Bragg and Wright's truck classes. Local drivers will take the track with four-wheel drive gas and four-wheel drive diesel classes. To participate, drivers must be residents in either Coles, Moultrie, or Douglas counties, or a CUSD number 305 school district. The vehicles must be licensed and street legal. The pull is a fundraiser for the Arthur Atwood Lions Club. Funds raised from the pull remain in our local community and are used to help those with diabetes and vision issues, scholarships, and other local humanitarian projects. Lions International is made up of 1.4 million members in 49,000 clubs around the world. Volunteers and partners improve health and well-being, strengthen communities, and support those in need through humanitarian services and grants that improve lives globally and encourage peace and international understanding. For information regarding the pull, please call Jim Fleming, 217-791-1026. For further information regarding sponsorship, please call Jennifer Perrine, 217-254-1703. And the last front page story, Flags of Our Fathers Celebration Discusses History and Patriotism by Jacob Hamm. The Tuscola Community Building was decorated with dozens of flags throughout American history Wednesday evening's Flag of Our Fathers event. The event, which was sponsored by the Douglas County Museum and Tuscola's Tourism Department, showcased approximately 65 different flags used in America dating back to the Revolutionary War era. The various flags on display were used by various military divisions, different time periods during America's history, by having different flags displayed and other flags such as the State of Illinois flag, and the Ambassador flag. Carol Castellano and Daphne Coffey were the main organizers of the event. Castellano acquired the various flags as she's a member of the Daughters of the American Revolution organization. She began hosting events showcasing the flags during citizen naturalization ceremonies and during Constitution Week events across central Illinois. We wanted to just bring American pride and history into our community, and this was a great way of being able to share the history with local members and was able to show all the beautiful flags. That's something that we haven't gotten to have here for a very long time, Coffey said. We'll move now to the obituaries. Glenn Ray Mast, 78, of Arthur, passed away at 12:41 p.m. on Friday, May 29, 2026, at Sarah Bush Lincoln Health Center in Mattoon after a short battle with cancer. Visitation was held Sunday, May 31st at Arthur Christian School, Arthur. Funeral services were held Monday, June 1st at Arthur Christian School. Pastor Jim Plank officiated. Burial was in the Sunnyside Mennonite Church Cemetery in rural Arcola. The Edwards Funeral Home assisted with arrangements. Dolores Evelyn Askew Lust, age 97, of Hammond, passed away peacefully at 9:09 a.m. on Thursday, May 2026 at Savoy Place Memory Care in Savoy, surrounded by family and her special team of caregivers. Funeral services to honor her life were held on Wednesday, June 3rd at the Hammond United Methodist Church with Pastor Lelang Lug officiating. Dawes was laid to rest in the Hammond Cemetery. Virginia Lee West, 87, passed away peacefully, surrounded by family on May 25th, 2026 at the Piatt County Nursing Home in Monticello. Memorial visitation was held on Saturday, May 30th at the Mackey Wright Funeral Home, Monticello, followed by a graveside memorial service at the Arthur Cemetery in Arthur. The next article, PJ's Place Opens Its Doors to the Community, by Jacob Hamm. After several year-long process of finding a property and securing funding, Linda Scribner's vision of opening a sober living house for men has become a reality. An open house was held Friday afternoon at the property in rural Tuscola. Scribner started the journey after two sons died from drug overdoses, Jordan, who used the nickname Petey, who died from a heroin overdose in 2014, and Jacob, who died from overdosing on fentanyl-laced methamphetamine in 2019. Scribner has wanted to turn these tragedies into an opportunity to raise awareness about drug addiction and make a difference in the community. It's super exciting, Scribner said about opening her sober living home. The home will accommodate 8 men at one time in dormitory-style housing upstairs with sick alcove with desks and lamp. There are 2 additional beds and a bedroom for the first floor for those with limited mobility. The house features a living room, 2 sleeping rooms, 2 full bathrooms, a kitchen, a laundry room, a recreation facility with workout equipment, gardens and plants for the residents to take care of, a chicken coop, a horse, and a stable, an office for Scribner to meet with community leaders. Scribner said all other services such as counseling and job training and placement will be incorporated into the lives of the resident as well. The goal is to have people come here and then be able to go back into the community successfully and substance-free, she said. The next article, County Health Department Begins Mental Health Treatment by Jacob Hamm. With the closure of Rise Behavioral Health and Wellness after nearly 50 years of serving the Douglas County community, the Douglas County Health Department has begun overseeing mental health treatments and services. Two health department employees, Cheyenne Holt and Anna Stroll, discussed the changes that were being made to accommodate these new services. "We've already started collecting a wait list for patients," Stroll said. "The health department has been working with Rise to transition their clients into services at the health department. The office space has undergone physical changes, too. We transferred some employees to remote work, and we're also holding services in Arthur and Villa Grove," Holt said. "The health department has also hired an additional nurse practitioner to conduct physicals and mental health screenings. The agency is running off grant funding to provide these services," according to Holt and Stroll. The next article, 250 fireballs planned for the 205th Celebration of America, by Trudy Feyerisen. Sat down with Larry Schlamach to learn more about their plans for the 2026 Arthur Fireworks. A year and a half ago, he had a dream of shooting off 250 fireballs in honor of America's 250th birthday and started to share the dream with others. Among the first people he talked to about it was Charlie Oye of Oye's Hardware, where many materials for the fireworks are purchased each year, and longtime employee there, Lyle Otto. Both men caught into his dreams and helped him put together a frame of mortars, tubes in which you place the fireballs. This first prototype was made with wood, but was tested. The entire frame busted and collapsed. A frame made of stronger material was needed. Building the prototype had taken much time and effort, and Larry was quite discouraged by its failure and thought, well, that's it. I don't have a plan B or time to regroup. But the Falls Fellows, a group named after the infamous Niagara Falls firework display, were trained and employed by J&M Displays and licensed to handle explosives, would hear none of that, imploring, you can do this, we're not going to let you give up now. Larry expressed that through their encouragement and enabling grace of the Lord, he was led to approach Travis Coons of Easy Trail to build a frame out of steel. The mortars are still made at Oye's Hardware. He and Travis brought a new design to his employee, Jason Stutzman, who then drew up plans to make the frame from steel, and Martin Corona, who welded the seven frames. Less than a week later, the prototype was finished, Larry stating, with added features that made it even better, and the test was a success. Full speed ahead. The Arthur Fireworks shot off its first fireball in 2003 and have added more each year, last year having 124 in the program. The set of 250 fireballs this year would have been meticulously timed to the song America the Beautiful and are expected to be a major highlight of this year's show, coming at the heels of gorgeous Niagara Falls. The entire event will be simulcast on Fox FM 106.7, so you can tune in to hear the music with your personal headphones if you prefer that over the loudspeakers. Other special features this year include three 16-inch American-made shells, which is a firework about the size of a large pumpkin weighing 60 pounds that goes a fourth of a mile into the sky. It's the first time the Arthur fireworks have shot off this size since 2009, as they are impossible to import. They're also planning four of the next size down, 12-inch, also American-made. Larry and the crew are super excited to make this year's show extra special. Many long hours and much hard work go into this event every year. This year, especially as the prototype to shoot off 250 fireballs within 50 seconds is truly a new invention and will once again put Arthur on the map. It will be a wonderful display of perseverance and not giving up on your dream, Larry stating, we have the greatest fans. When many people come out and see what you do, it really motivates, as does the amazing support of the Arthur community. It's very humbling. None of this would be possible without the loyal team around me. Everything starts with a dream. God's making my dream come true. So come out and enjoy this remarkable display Saturday evening, June 27th, as well as the downtown parade at 2 o'clock, which will boast a showpiece of one of the seven frames that will be shooting off the 250 fireballs. As Larry excitedly exclaimed, you won't want to miss it. It's going to be pretty amazing. The next article, the reluctant novelist, rambling man David Porter. If you really like it, you can have the rights. You can make it millions for you overnight. If you must return, you can send it here, but I need a break and I want to be a paperback writer. The Beatles. As you may know, I've dipped my toe in the novel water. I just dipped it again with my second novel and fourth book. I don't know why I do it. I have no illusion of becoming a best-selling author. Call it professional growth of amateur insanity. It's a lot of work to write and publish books that almost nobody will read. They won't read them, mostly because they won't find them tucked away on Amazon alongside of millions of other books. Being an independent publisher means there's no marketing budget. When you make a $5 book, you have to sell 100 books to recoup a $500 ad spend. That's not a good investment. So it just sits there hoping someone will buy it, read it, and like it enough to leave a review or tell a friend, or maybe in 100 years, five people will have read it. Marketers find it. I get four or five emails a week from marketers telling me how great my books are and how well they could do if only I could give them $1,000. The books are not great. They're okay. As far as novel go, they're as good as 80% of the novels I've read. And then again, I haven't read very many novels. I'm reluctant to market them anyway because they're a lot different from what I write here. I don't even use the same name on them because I don't want to get in my longtime readers to buy them and then hate me for the rest of their lives. The novels are, let's say, gritty. They use language and talk about situations you'll never read about from me here. I think there's one reason I write them, actually. It's a different medium with a different style, thus I expect them to have a different audience. The funny thing is, I don't care whether anybody reads them. That seems counterproductive, I know, but I don't write them for other people, I write them for myself. If other people read them and like them, that's mayonnaise on my ham sandwich. I'm not done. I have a couple more novels in me, maybe more. We'll see. I've been in the newspaper business for more than 40 years. I need a different outlook, a new challenge. I have no intention of quitting my day job, and judging from Curl Sales, that's not going to be a problem. I just want to be a paperback writer, and now I am. And the next article, They Were Giants in the Valley, Newman, Illinois. I'm Just Saying by Mike Carroll. Now 79, I'm circling the historic Okhaw Valley Conference, 1925 to 1971, to meet with other athletic competitors and friends for one more let's get together while we can still remember things semi-accurately. Recently, it was Oakland. Today, it's Newman. Good friend and football and basketball competitor Steve Allen of Newman, who is 1 year older than me, recently called me to reschedule our meeting. Sorry, the rescheduling, but I'm baling hay this week. Baling hay? Next thing you know, he'll be telling me he's still playing softball, the oldest guy on the team that recently won the National Senior Olympics. What? He really is? And he still writes me letters, real multi-page ones on paper, where he usually tells me how much he enjoys my articles, reminisces, even reminds me he has carried in his wallet for decades a piece of an old article I wrote because it inspires me. Steve is in my last will and testament, big time. I'm talking three figures. When I hear from Steve or his cousin Ed, who also writes me real letters, I'm swamped with fond memories of Newman and its close-knit, tough, proud, and patriotic people. If I start naming all of them, my fragile fingers will fracture. I make this judgment about Newman because I had the pleasure of being Newman's city attorney for over 20 years, working for several mayors, including Steve's brother Jim, and came to appreciate its strong, resilient core, which I already had an inkling of during athletic battles from the past. Newman is close-knit. The Allens, the Albans, the Whites, I could go on and on, but the point is, I think everyone in Newman is related, or at least there's only one degree of separation. They're tighter than the belt I recently tried on that I wore in high school. Newman is proud and patriotic. Take the photo at right of Newman veterans posing during Douglas County's dedication of the Military Veterans Memorial in 2005, designed by Ken Fernandez. They're all related by blood, town, and military. Steve was a Marine Corps captain, combat veteran of Vietnam. Cousin Ken was a Marine infantryman engaged in the horrific fighting of two major Vietnam battles, Hue City, called the war's bloodiest battle, and the 77-day siege of Khe Sanh. Cousin Mike, who moved to Tuscola for the weather and played opposite me as a left end, was wounded in the first great clash in Vietnam in Drang Valley, November 1965. The Battle of Drang Valley was later made into a 2002 movie, We Were Soldiers, starring Mel Gibson. Uncle Jack, along with Steve's dad, Bob, and his uncles Clifford, Shorty Earl, and Shelton, all but one served in the combat during World War II. Newman is tough. It's Douglas County's easternmost town, one of six Douglas County's so-called small schools, Arcola, Arthur, Atwood, Village Grove, and Oakland being the other five, with Arthur and Atwood East poking into our county and Oakland squeaking in by an old fence post and a Bermashave sign. Out of county, Bement and Sarah Goder made up the final two of the eight charter school members of the small school of the historic Okhaw Valley. Tuscola was one of the four big schools, along with charter members Sullivan and Monticello and newcomer Unity, which joined in 1958, being the other. Being almost twice the population of the smaller schools, Tuscola was always a prize plum to pummel, if not pick, prune, and pulverize into a puree, which they often did, often for my comfort. For example, Newman won the first game, 12-6, ever played between the two towns in 1898. From 1939 to 1943, Tuscola's football team was dominant, having won 37 consecutive Okhaw games. That streak was finally broken by Newman, 13-7, as I was reminded by Jack Allen, Steve's uncle, member of the Newman's 43 team, and Douglas County clerk, who took a young pup of a state's attorney, me, under his wing in 1976 to teach me where the law books were and how to read them. In 1960, Newman tied Tuscola 6-6 for the Okhaw Championship with their huge fullback, Larry Hendershot, dragging Tuscola tacklers along with his bruising runs, just like so many cockburrs stuck to his uniform. Larry later played pro football for the Washington Redskins. I remember these giants in football. I had to block Big Bill Kincaid, large and strong as a bull. I had to tackle, I mean really try to tackle, Jerry Crazy Legs Walmsley, who went on to be little All-American at Western Illinois University. There was big Max Lewis, Bob Moore, Denny Winkler, and other blocks of giant. Like Mongo and Blazing Saddles, I'm confident each of them could knock out a horse with one punch. Where'd they get these giants? Sadly, Newman closes high school in 1994, and then it's grade school, ending a storied athletic history. Steve said that in 1964, his senior year, there were 43 grads, shrinking to 15 by the time the high school closed. When Steve and I discussed this depressing trend of small rural towns losing their schools, he singled out the phenomenon of the consolidation, modernization, corporatizing of farming, which results in the loss of children of tenant farmers. Steve, as a lifelong guidance counselor, coach, and English teacher at Newman and Shiloh, has kept track of the loss of his demographic. He says that for every 10 children of tenant farmers in the 60s, there was at best near only one at the end. I discussed this story with Oakland's Mark Petty, who agreed, ticking off some of the great 60s rural athletes, e.g. Hudson, Easton, Trimble, Giles, Jordan, Allen, Childress. It seemed the small schools in Douglas County metaphorically lost the farm when they literally lost the farm. The population density of the rural farm landscape has shrunk to almost nothing. In the colonial era, for example, 80 to 90% of the population was engaged in agriculture. By 1900, it shrunk to 40%, and now it's less than 2%. With it ended a way of life, an era of hard-worked, hay-baling, tough-as-nails rural kids who could knock your socks off in sports. I know because, as a townie, my mom kept asking me where my socks were. At the end of a long day of trading warm and a few sad, other often funny reminiscences, Steve concluded, "The best thing about the special time and place was the friendships formed." Copy that, Captain Steve. Keep on bailing. The next article, Arthur Seeks June 27th parade entries. Entries for Arthur's 2026 Freedom Celebration Parade are being accepted. Individuals, organizations, churches, and businesses interested in participating in the parade should call Stephanie Weirman, 217-620-7460, to request a form. Celebrating 250 years, One Nation, One Community is the theme for this year's parade. Sponsored by Arthur Area Association of Commerce, the lineup for the parade will begin at 12:30 p.m. in the Old Progress Tank Facility, 402 East Progress Street, and the parade will begin promptly at 2 p.m. The Freedom Celebration Parade route will run west on Progress Street to Vine Street, turn left on Vine, and travel through downtown Arthur. The parade route turns left off Vine to Logan Street, and then left again on Pine Street, and ends back at the Progress Street. The Arthur American Legion Post 479 will be handing out American flags along the parade route again this year. People are encouraged to bring their lawn chairs to watch the parade anywhere along the route with their families, friends, and neighbors. Kids and kids at heart, don't forget to bring the candy bags. Parade entries should remember to report to for the line between 12:30 and 1:45 p.m. on June 27th. The next article, official 2026 Arthur Fireworks t-shirts now available to support veterans. Arthur residents and visitors can show their patriotic spirit while supporting a great cause with the official 2026 Arthur Fireworks t-shirts now available for purchase at Dick's Pharmacy, Oye's Hardware, Save-A-Lot, and Yoder's Kitchen. Shirts are available in the sizes ranging from youth small through adult 3X. New this year, the shirts featured a glow-in-the-dark design to making them a fun addition to the annual fireworks celebration. The 2026 Arthur Fireworks celebration will take place on the evening of Saturday, June 27th at Jurgens Park. Proceeds from this year's shirt sale will benefit the Combat Veterans Motorcycle Association, CVMA, an organization made up of combat veterans from all branches of the United States Armed Forces who share a passion for motorcycle riding. The mission of the CVMA is to support and defend those who have defended the nation and its freedoms. The organization focuses on assisting veterans through support for veteran care facilities, helping provide meals, clothing, shelter, guidance, and offering heartfelt appreciation to veterans through acts of service and recognition. Community members are encouraged to purchase the shirt, support local fireworks festivities, and help honor America's veterans during America's 250th anniversary celebration this year. We have time for a few briefs. Flag retirement. The Arcola VFW Post 7862 and American Legion Post 639 will hold their fifth annual flag retirement ceremony Saturday, June 13th at Arcola Center. The ceremony will begin right after the Raggedy Ann Parade, and community members are welcome to attend and participate. Members of both chapters will be there to answer questions. Flags can be dropped off at the Arcola Public Library, drop box at the top of the stairs, or given directly to Bob Delwire, 217-549-9791. And that is all the time we have for this week. This is Chris Yerkes. Say goodbye and see you again next week.